What's interesting about the Shabbat is when the Bible talks about it, there are five books in the Bible: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So the Bible refers to Shabbat in two of the books, and there's a lot of biblical theories about these. The fact that the last book of the Bible, Deuteronomy, repeats a lot of the laws in the Bible. It's called in Hebrew Mishnah Torah, which is the second Torah. In other words, it's a repetition of the whole Bible. Before Moses died, he repeated a lot of laws. So we find the Shabbat is referred to in the second book in Exodus and also in the last book in Deuteronomy. And the interesting thing is the different words used to describe the Shabbat. So I just want to clarify that. So the whole Ten Commandments, in fact, are repeated twice in the Bible. In the second book in Exodus, when the Jews came out of Egypt, they got the Ten Commandments. And then again, in Deuteronomy, Moses repeats the story and tells them about the Ten Commandments. The mitzvah of Shabbat is the fourth of the Ten Commandments. Okay, so it's the fourth of the Ten Commandments. In the book of Exodus, it says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." That's the first time it mentions Shabbat. In the second time around, in the book of Deuteronomy, it says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy." Not remember, but observe the Sabbath. That's one difference. What's the difference between remembering and observing? That is one major question we have to answer. And the second difference in the accounts, in the book of Exodus it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, because in 6 days God created heaven and earth, and on the seventh day God rested. So the reason for keeping the Sabbath is to remember creation. God rested after creation. But in Deuteronomy it says the reason for keeping the Sabbath is because you were slaves in Egypt and God took you out. So the second reason given in Deuteronomy is a different reason, is we were slaves in Egypt and God took us out of Egypt, and that's why we remember the Sabbath. So there's two different reasons given, and obviously these are the two questions we have to face. Number one, why does it use different language, remember and keep? And number two, why the different reasons for keeping the Sabbath? In order to remember creation, and number two, in order to remember the coming out of Egypt. So what are the differences in these? One of the famous biblical commentators was called Rashi. Rashi is an acronym for the words Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, Rabbi Shlomo Isaac. A lot of the rabbis were called by acronyms. The name got too long. Rambam is famous. Rambam is Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Rabbi Moses, the son of Maimon. Rabbi Maimon, who was here last year, I think he's related, he's descended from the Rambam. So that's an acronym was used very widely because people didn't want to spell out the whole name, they were lazy. So Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, he's a famous biblical commentator. He commented not only on the Bible, but he commented on the Mishnah and he commented on the Talmud. So all of these, in fact the whole Bible nearly has his commentary. He lived in France in the 11th century, and apparently he was a very famous landowner. He had vineyards, he used to produce wine, his wine was very famous. Today you have a wine, I think Kedem produces a wine called Rashi after him, because he was a famous wine producer. I don't know how he had this time, but he had enough time to write these commentaries on the whole Bible. So in his commentary he explains as follows: why does the first time the Bible mention the Shabbat it says remember the Sabbath? And why does the second time it talks about Shabbat, it says keep the Sabbath? So he says, what's the difference between remembering and keeping? When you have someone in front of you who you know, obviously you don't remember him because you're seeing him right now. It's only when he's not there then you remember him. He says, remembering the Sabbath is referring to before the Sabbath. So the week prior to the Sabbath, the person remembers the Sabbath. It's not the Sabbath now. Whereas keeping the Sabbath is on the actual day. That's how Rashi explains. He says, remembering is prior to the Sabbath, and keeping is remembering the Sabbath. Keeping the Sabbath. Keeping on the Shabbat, on the Shabbat itself. Let me give an example for this. The Jewish days of the week don't have any names. Interesting. English days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. What's the word for Sunday in Hebrew? Any ideas? Yom Rishon, first day. Monday, Yom Sheni, second day. Tuesday, Yom Shlishi, third day. There's no days, there's no names. In fact, it's also interesting, the months of the year, the Jewish months of the year, in the Bible, no names. It's the first month, second month, third month, it's only later. the Jews, when they went to Babylon, gave the months of the year Babylonian names. It's interesting, the Jewish names for the months are Babylonian names, and they came much later. They came about 1,000 years after the Bible was given. The Bible does not give any names for the months. It talks about the first month, and it counts the months from coming out of Egypt. That's the first time the Jews became a people. So it really counts the months from the middle of the year, from Nisan, from Passover. So when my Bible talks about the first month, it's referring to the first month of the year from coming out, from being a free people. Similarly, the months of the kings were always counted from Nisan, which is the first month from Passover. But why does the Bible always count the days of the week in terms of the first day, second day, third day? And the answer is we're always building up towards the Shabbat. So when the Shabbat's over, we know we have to count towards the next Shabbat. We're always counting forwards to the next Shabbat. So every day remembering the Shabbat, so we say this is the first day to Shabbat, the second day to Shabbat, until we get to the sixth day, and then the seventh day is Shabbat. So it's counting down or counting up towards Shabbat. So this way remembering Shabbat all the week, and that fits into Rashi's commentary. The other big example we have of this is on Hanukkah. Hanukkah is 8 days. Every day we light an extra candle. Again, we're building up, because the eighth day is the biggest miracle. The light in the temple, they only found one jar of oil, and that jar lasted 8 days. Every day was an extra miracle. We really should have burnt out the first day. It lasted an extra day, we light an extra light. 8th day was the biggest miracle, it lasted 8 days, so we lighted 8 candles. We build up. So the build up is seen, building up towards Shabbat. This way we remember the Shabbat through the days of the week, and we build up towards the Shabbat. So where the Shabbat is observed all week, we count towards it. That's what the remembering is referring to. And Jewish law says, we discussed this last night, when you see something nice in a store, you should buy it for Shabbat. As you see a nice dish, a nice piece of food, and it won't get stale. Today we have refrigerators. You should always try and buy something, even during the week. See something nice, buy it for Shabbat. This way, first remember Shabbat all week. Everything is geared towards Shabbat. So really, Shabbat is the goal of the week. We don't rest on Shabbat in order to work. We work on the 6 days in order to rest. It's like saying, what do? You eat to live, or do you live to eat? So we live, we don't live to eat, we eat to live. It's a means to an end, it's not an end in itself. Eating is not an end to itself, it never has been Jewish law. Similarly, we don't have Shabbat in order to rest and earn our living later. We have Shabbat in order, that's the goal. We work in order to have Shabbat. We work all the 6 days. And that is what the Bible tells us. It says, you will work 6 days, and the seventh day you will rest. It was the 6 days leading up, is leading up to the goal of resting. So really we have to see the Shabbat as a goal. It's a goal of the week. It's not a day of rest so that we can refresh ourselves in order to work the next week. We work all week in order to enjoy the spiritual and the physical aspects of Shabbat. And this is the answer to the question of, who do we work for? Why are we working? Who do we work for? When God created man, God created a partnership between body and soul. Man comes from the dust of the earth, that's what the Bible says, and there was the physical aspects of man. But the spirit, the soul, comes from God. So we have a partnership between the body and the soul. We have a partnership between the physical and the spiritual. What Judaism tries to do is blend the two without getting top-heavy in either way. It's a perfect merge between the physical, a perfect balance between the physical and the spiritual. So in other words, in terms of Jewish life, we see the 7 days are split. 6 days we work in the physical, and the seventh day is the spiritual. That's one day which we have for the spiritual. That's the balance in our lives. But during the 6 days as well, we have to realize what we're working towards. The goal is the spiritual, not the physical. When Judaism started, it was a very revolutionary concept to rest one day a week. I mean, they never had that concept before. They were working all the time. It's interesting. We don't think about it today. Today we have 2 days. But for a long time, the anti-Semites accused the Jews of being lazy. They took a day off. Lazy people. And prior to Christianity, it was unheard of for other religions to rest one day. They had their holy days, maybe once or twice a year, but they never had a set day a week. In fact, the introduction of the 7 day week is a Jewish concept. It's one of the concepts we are given to the world. We don't even think about it. But thousands of years ago, because of the Bible, the whole world has a 7 day week today. They tried to change this recently in Russia, when it was still under communist control. They tried to make an 8 day week. This way they would have 7 days work and 1 day rest. They tried to get the most out of the people, but it didn't work. They tried out for it didn't go. So 7 day working week seems to have worked. And this is one of the contributions the Jews gave to the world. We don't realize how many contributions we have. We've changed totally changed society. Judaism has changed society totally. If we would compare society today to what society was prior, it wouldn't be recognized. The idea of ethics and monotheism and morality all being given by the Jews to the world. And one of the little things we've given is 7-day working week and the idea of a rest day during this this week. So obviously the Christians took it and they changed it, luckily, to a Sunday. Prior to that, the Hebrew Christians, the first Christians were Jews. Jesus himself was a Jew. These Hebrew Christians went to synagogue on Shabbat, kept Shabbat, kept all the laws of kosher. So later on, when Jesus died, his followers changed to attract the masses of people. They didn't want to rely on Jews converting, because not many Jews converted. They wanted to make their religion more appealing to the non-Jews, to the pagans. So a lot of pagan customs developed into Christianity, and they were intermingled, mixed with it. That's interesting. And the idea of the new year, apparently Jesus was born on the 25th of December. The new year is his birthday. There's a Brit. The Brit took place on the new year. That's why it became the new year. So all these, you can see what we have given to the world. They've taken all these concepts and they've mixed it up, like the Pope wears a kippah. I mean, where do you think he got the idea from? All these concepts were taken from Judaism, even Islam, a lot of it. The idea of halal meat had to be slaughtered in a certain way. All these concepts were taken from Judaism. But two of the major religions, at least, are based on Judaism, are founded from Judaism. So really, Shabbat experience is given by the Jews to the world. 7-day working week is a Jewish concept. So who calls the shots in terms of our lives and what we work for? All week long we work to make a living to support ourselves. In that sense we're working for our bodies, because we're working towards the physical. We're supporting ourselves physically. So when we count, this is the first day to Shabbat, and this is the second day of Shabbat, we're reminding ourselves of the true goal. The true goal is, we're working ourselves towards the spiritual, not just the physical. So we're working for our bodily sustenance, but always with a view towards the ultimate, a view towards the soul, a view towards the spiritual. There's a lovely story about Menachem Begin, one of the prime ministers of Israel. Israel, till today, works a 6-day week. You work all 6 days on the Saturday. Shabbat is the only day off. So someone asked him, an American asked him, he says, Menachem, he says, when do you think Israel will start working a 5-day week? So Menachem says, we'll do it slowly. First we'll work 1 day, then we'll work 2 days, then we'll work 3 days, eventually we'll work 5 days. That was his joke. He says, people don't really work in Israel. They have tea breaks and coffee breaks, especially in the civil service. There's a law that says you only need a mezuzah in a room where there's a person sleeps or a person eats. So the Israeli civil service, they all have mezuzahs, because they do both. Okay. So remembering our soul, that is one of the mitzvah. Remembering the Sabbath. Remembering the Sabbath means remembering spirituality. We will work and work all week. We are asked to remember that everything is for the sake of the soul. Our goal in life is to reach whatever Shabbat represents. What does Shabbat represent? Shabbat represents the spiritual. Shabbat is not a day to collapse so we can get on the treadmill again. Shabbat is a means, it's an end to itself. It's we work 6 days in order to flavor the spiritual experience of the Shabbat. I'm going to go into the purposes of Shabbat a bit later. Now, what about the two reasons the Bible gives? In the book of Exodus, the Bible tells us the Shabbat is for to remember that God rested on the seventh day. God created the 6 days, God rested the seventh day. Obviously, God doesn't need to rest. I mean, how did he create? Just willed something to happen and something happened. He didn't really need to rest, so we have to understand the concept of work and rest as well. But let's take these two reasons the Bible gives. In Exodus, it says, remember the Sabbath to make it holy because God rested on that day. In the book of Deuteronomy, the Bible says, keep the Sabbath to make it holy because God took you out from Egypt, from the land of bondage. And the idea is, a slave never has a moment's rest. And we rest one day to show we're not slaves today. The difference between a slave and a free person is, a slave cannot have any leisure time, a free person has leisure time. So we show that we are free people by resting that day, we take the day. So even a person who's self-employed, the Jewish classification of a slave is a person who doesn't stop. So a person who works 7 days, even though they're self-employed, a Jew, I would say he's a slave. A slave to his work, a slave to his labor, doesn't have any rest. So now, what is the concept of melacha, of work? So the question most rabbis are asked is, Rabbi, you need to tell me that switching on a light on Shabbat is work. All I have to do is flick a switch, that's not working. In those days, they had to cut and gather wood, they had to work hard to get the initial spark. Today, it's just a flick of a switch. Is that considered work? So how do we answer that question? What is work referring to over here? The Bible, when it talks about Shabbat, it says, Sheshet Yamim Tavod, 6 days you will labor, and you will do all your work. The two words used here for work, one is labor, in Hebrew, Avodah, and the other one is work, which is Melacha. And then when it talks about Shabbat, it says, and you will, on Shabbat, you will not do any work. It doesn't say you will not do any labor. So over here, when we talk about Shabbat, we're not talking about work in the sense of sweat, physical labor. It's talking about creative labor, creative work. God created the world without any effort. It's talking about creation. Creative forms of labor are not allowed. And that's what I want to give out here. The sheet. Let me just pass them around. The sheets which describe 39 forms of labor which are not allowed on Shabbat. I'll discuss them more in detail some other time. As you'll see, most of them are creative forms of labor. We're creating something by doing something. So now, what is the difference between work and labor, between creative forms of labor and physical work? I'll make some more later, I'll make some more copies later, for those who don't have it. We're not really going to go into that, just for your reference. So what is the difference? One is creative, one is not creative. What can't be done on Shabbat? It's not labor in terms of physical labor. I have a guest coming. I need to move a sofa bed three flights. I'm allowed to on Shabbat. No problem at all. That's labor. That's physical labor. No problem. Shabbat, I'm allowed to do physical labor. What I can't do is creative forms of work. I can't switch on a light because I'm creating something which wasn't there before. I can't change something. I'm cooking. I'm changing something. A food which is raw to a food which is cooked. So that's creative forms of work. Those are the forms of work which are not allowed. Other forms of labor which are physical are allowed. I'm not changing. Physical labor is allowed on Shabbat.
Question. Yeah. Yeah. Electricity,
yeah, but what's the I'm talking about the philosophical reason behind it. Philosophical reason behind switching on. Extinguishing is also forbidden. Extinguishing is also, I'm changing something which was there before to something to make it disappear. It's changing. Any kind of change, if it's creative or destructive, is forbidden. So any form of change is forbidden. But work which does not involve change, I'm just moving things around, that's allowed. The only exception is carrying in a place where there's no eruv. Even though that's not, that's called a malacha grua. It's not a complete form of labor. It's not a complete form of creation.
Right.
These things basically are creative forms of labor. So any kind of creative form of labor where you're changing something or creating something new, those are the kinds of labor which are forbidden. So technically I can move furniture around all my life, you know, in Shabbat I can rearrange my whole house, technically. Even though I'm sweating, there's no problem at all. But flicking a light switch is melacha, because melacha is a creative form of work, and that is forbidden. Now let's look at the roots in the Hebrew terms of malacha. What is malacha? The Hebrew root is malach. What is a malach? An angel. What is an angel? A messenger of God. A messenger. When we do work, that really is, the work we do is our messenger. It shows what we want to do. It's the messenger of our thoughts. So the work we do is the messenger of our will, of our desires. So to determine what is a creative act, the Bible uses the forming of the tabernacle. When the Jews in the wilderness were given, they couldn't build a temple, they weren't permanent in any place, they had to move around. The Bible says, look, build a sanctuary for God, a portable sanctuary. So all the things which they did to make the sanctuary, those are the things which we have forbidden to do on Shabbat. Those are considered creative acts, and they are forbidden to do on Shabbat. Those are the 39 categories which you have in front of you. Those are the biblical categories, and obviously there are many more things which the rabbis talked about which grow out of them. So creative activities ranging from planting to cooking to writing, etc., all those things are forbidden to do on Shabbat. Now, why are these things forbidden to be done on Shabbat? We are bidden to imitate God. 6 days God worked, and on the seventh he rested. Obviously, God doesn't need to take days off for physical labor, because God doesn't do any physical labor. That's not the kind of rest the Torah is talking about. The Torah is talking about creative rest. You know, when God stopped creating. When it talks about God resting, it means God stopped creating. Now, why did God stop creating? He ceased creating to show that he was God and the Creator. In other words, he could tell creation stop. He didn't put into effect a chain of events which is just non-stop. He said, look, enough is enough, stop. In fact, it's interesting, one of the words in the mezuzah, on the outside of the mezuzah, is the word Shaddai. Shaddai is the name of God, which stands for either Shomer Dlatot Yisrael, three words. Shomer is guardian, Dlatot, the doors of Israel. Shaddai, that's what could mean. The real meaning of Shaddai is Ze She'amar Le'olam Dai. He told the world stop. He told creation stop. As he shows his authority over creation by stopping creation. That is also a proof that God is the creator, that he stopped everything. Yes. Again, a tie knot would create something which wasn't there. It would create a binding which wasn't there. So you're creating two things to be linked together. That kind of knot is not considered a knot. That's a temporary, okay. That's not considered a knot. We're talking about a permanent knot. In those days, they classified it as a workman's knot. Like, say, a fisherman, when he makes a knot on the nets, those knots were pretty good. They were never opened. They're not. Those are considered knots. Over here, this is temporary. It's not really creating something which is permanent. Especially a bow knot is not considered a knot at all in Jewish law. It's not considered a knot. Fortunately, thankfully.
What about cutting grass?
Cutting grass on Shabbat is not allowed.
You said gardening.
Right. Maybe. Gardening is a creative form of nature. We're interfering with nature. Interfering with nature on Shabbat is not allowed. We're going to discuss that again.
We're allowed to
say, obviously, we have to eat on Shabbat. Now, how restrictive do you make Shabbat? It's got to be a day of enjoyment as well. There's got to be a very fine balance.
You're allowed to tear?
I'm allowed to tear, but in a non-creative way. I'm allowed to tear in a destructive way. I'm ripping a bag apart.
Do you not allowed to use a thing to put on tinfoil, to cut a tinfoil then?
You're not allowed to put cut a tinfoil to a certain specific size. I'm not allowed to measure and cut. I cut without measuring. You're not specifically to measure and cut, because then that's another form of creation. You have to do that in a building process. You cut things to size and build. Now, these laws are very involved. I'm just giving you a brief list. It's not a place to go through them. I'm going through them on Tuesday night, for those who want to come. And we're going through it in real detail on Tuesday nights. I just want to try and talk about a bit of philosophy behind it. What's the idea behind Shabbat? So the idea of Shabbat is not really rest. It's for a person to show they're in control. I can say stop. I'm not a slave. I'm emulating God, who told the world to stop. That is the connection between coming out of Egypt, the fact that God took us out from slavery, we're not slaves anymore, and the fact that God stopped creation as well, to show he was the master, he was the boss. He could even stop what he created. Now, that's one of the famous books. Shelley, the author, the poet, his sister wrote a book called Frankenstein. Frankenstein is not the monster. Frankenstein was the doctor who created the monster, Dr. Frankenstein. So he created something, but his creation went out of control. So it shows he was not in control. So what God did was, he created and stopped. He showed that he was in control. And that's something which we have to emulate as well. We have to control what we create as well. So we have to stop one day a week. Let's take a personal example. A person starts a business. It's successful. It gets bigger and bigger. How can a person come home for supper time? How much time does a person have with the kids? A person has to make a living. But a person is working to support his kids and his wife. But a person never sees them. There's a contradiction here. So where does a person draw the lines? I'm working. I'm working in order to support my wife and my kids. But I'm working so much, I never see them. So what's the use of working? What am I working for? So on Shabbat, we show that we're the master. We're in control. We take time off. And with our kids and with our wives and with our families. Now that's a normal question, you know. Person comes to the rabbi. He says, you're telling me to close my store on Shabbat. Says, I can't close it. It's business. I mean, it's the main day. So the rabbi says, who owns the business? He says, I own the business. He says, no, you don't. The business owns you. You can't close it. That shows you're not in control anymore. If you can't close the business, You can't take a day off. You're not in control anymore. So we have to take the example from God. God says stop, and we have to say stop as well. And that shows that we are in control. We keep ourselves in control. A similar example, have you ever seen an artist paint? So what they do is they paint a picture, and when they paint, they place a few brushes, take a few steps back, and look at the work. And that's exactly what the Shabbat is for. We're working all week, we're painting this beautiful canvas of life. Every Shabbat we have to step back and see, what are we creating? What are we doing with our time? What are we doing with the effects? And this concept of Shabbat does not only extend to the week, it also extends to the year. Yom Kippur is called Shabbat Shabbaton, the Sabbath of Sabbaths, which we have to evaluate the whole year's work. So we have this concept every week, then every year, and then every 7 years. There's a concept in the Bible of Shemitah. Shemitah is the sabbatical year. This concept is today in universities or rabbis. Some rabbis take a sabbatical. This whole idea of taking a sabbatical is a Jewish concept again. Every 6 years, the Bible tells us, in those days, it was an agricultural society. Everyone used to take off. The seventh year was Shabbat. It's considered a sabbatical year, and people took off, and they went to learn, and they went to meditate, and they wondered about their purpose in life. We're all human beings. We all get involved totally in what we get immersed in our daily lives. We don't have time to think, where is all this leading to? Where is all this going to get me? In your case in Vancouver, a person had a pharmacy, and he was the owner of the pharmacy, and he spent really 7 days a week. He spent like 14 hours a day. In the end, he died at the age of 50 with a heart attack. His wife says, I never saw him. His children hardly saw him. What was the purpose of life? So that's what it tells us to do. It's a mini stop. The Shabbat is a mini stop once a week. It's an opportunity to evaluate the messengers, the work which we're doing, to see whether they serve our purposes properly or whether we serve them. Are we serving the work, or is the work serving us? If a person can refrain from work on Shabbat, they can say, look, I'm in charge. I'm proving I'm in charge. But Shabbat is also an act of faith. There's a lovely story of a person who got onto a train. He was late for a business appointment. So he went to the front of the carriage and he started pushing on the wall, trying to make the train go faster. Obviously making the train, the train's going to go as fast as it is, whether you push or not. It's not going to help much. But that's what some people think, even though we're in a train and God is pulling the train, some people think, I've got to push this a bit faster. Obviously we have to put in our effort, but how much effort is required to earn a living? Do we have to work 7 days a week, or is sometimes 6 days enough? That's the question we have to ask. It's an affirmation of faith in God. I'll work 6 days and God will provide for me the seventh day. It takes a lot of faith to do that. But especially the seventh year, the whole year they had to take off. They couldn't do any forms of agricultural work. Until today, the Orthodox kibbutzim in Israel stop working on the seventh day, on the seventh year. So every seventh year, the land lies fallow. It's beautiful because everyone can come in and take the fruit. It's not restricted to the owner. Again, it shows that we are not the owners of the world. God is the owner. Everything belongs to God. Everyone else, we're all equal. You can all come in and take the fruit. So really, the Shabbat is really an instrument of faith in a broader sense. It teaches us to have faith in God. One day a week we refrain from work, we rely on God to provide for us. And similarly with the Shemitah, with the seventh year, the farmer doesn't work, and he relies on God to make up for the loss. The farmer has a sabbatical, that's the idea of sabbatical, to learn, to study, to be with the family, and to absorb the lesson that the field belongs to God, everything belongs to God. And of course, built into this mitzvah is something which wasn't yet known for hundreds of years, is that the land requires rest. It's an idea which came much later, the idea of rotating crop rotation or letting the land lie fallow. This needed to be done anyway, but the Jews, without even knowing this, God gave them the Torah. God says, let the land lie fallow every 7 years. So you can imagine how advanced that was. And the Torah is as deep as the sea. The rabbis compare it to the sea. There are very many reasons for all these laws. We just look at it on a simplistic level, and we just wonder what's going on. So we have to really think. If we really believe the Bible is from the Torah, obviously it has very deep reasons, and we have to go through these reasons, try and dig deeper and try and see what it's all about. There's another story which is used by Tolstoy, which was taken from the Midrash. It talks about a Polish landowner who had one of his tenants. In those days, the tenants could only rent property from the landowner, and he would give us a certain tax every year to the landowner. So his landowner was working very hard, and the tenant was working very hard, and the landowner made a lot of money out of his tenant. He said, look, I want to reward you. I'm going to give you your own land. The amount of land you can run around in one day, I'm going to give to you. So the tenant was very happy. So he worked out a system for himself. He says, look, so I'm going to run around a piece of land. I'm going to run as far as I can, you know, in a circular fashion, up to midday. And from midday on, I'm going to run back. So he started running. When it got to midday, he says, look, he says, if I run a bit faster, I can keep on running. Money out of his tenant. He says, look, I want to reward you. I'm going to give you your own land. The amount of land you can run around in one day, I'm going to give to you. So the tenant was very happy. So he worked out a system for himself. He says, look, so I'm going to run around a piece of land. I'm going to run as far as I can, you know, in a circular fashion, up to midday. And from midday on, I'm going to run back. So he started running. When it got to midday, he says, look, he says, if I run a bit faster, I can keep on running and run back, I'll run back a bit later. So he kept on going until about an hour before sunset, and it's time to run back. He started putting on speed, and he ran back all the way. On the way, his son stopped him. He says, Daddy, can you help me with my homework? He says, no, I don't have time. His wife came to him. He says, can you help me in the house? He says, no, I don't have time. I'm running right now. I'm busy. And the rabbi came and says, can you help us with a minyan? Come and make a minyan. He says, no, I'm busy right now. I'm running. I'm too busy. So eventually the story goes, he comes right to the end, and the landowner is surprised. He's shocked. He says, how much land did you run around? So the guy started laughing, and then he fell down and dropped dead. The landowner says, give him 6 foot. That's my land. How much land can we take with us? That's as much as we can take. 6 foot by 6 foot. There's a lovely custom which we have when a person passes away, put a bit of dust in the eyes. Very interesting. So Talmud tells us, when a person's born, nothing can satisfy the eyes. Whatever a person has is never enough. The only thing which will satisfy the person in the end is a piece of dust. It's a tragedy, really. If we don't think about it during our lifetimes, what are we running for? That's exactly what the idea of Shabbat is. Every 6 days we stop, we think, where are we going, where are we running to, what are we doing? Why we try so hard, striving, where is it going to get us? So contentment is a key to human survival. And in fact, Pirkei Avot says, who is a wealthy person, a person who is contented with their lot? Now the rabbis tell us you should be contented, but only in physical things, not in the spiritual. When it comes to the spiritual, the sky is the limit, we should strive. When it comes to the physical, contentment, because it's whatever much we have, we're never satisfied anyway. So the Bible tells us, remember the Sabbath to make it holy. And this we have to remember. We have to remember the goal for all our labors in the midst of our goal, in our midst of our labors. In the midst of our week, we have to remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. We have to remember the spiritual side to life while we're engaged in the physical. So there's a dimension within us that is Shabbat. Part of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday can be Shabbat as well. The more time we devote to our soul, that is part of our spiritual week as well. It's not just on the Shabbat. We can set aside time during our physical week also for the spiritual. Are there any questions so far? Because if not, I'm going to go through some of the major reasons for the Shabbat. As we mentioned before, the Shabbat is one of the unique contributions of Judaism to civilization. This idea of resting one day a week is very revolutionary. It was never around prior to Judaism. It's one of the contributions Judaism has made to civilization. Its observance is commanded in the fourth of the Ten Commandments. And Shabbat is in many ways constitutes Judaism's attempt to create one day a week to remind us of the goals and purposes of life. In order to understand the Shabbat, it is first necessary to acknowledge that the purpose of Shabbat is to make each seventh day holy. We try and make the seventh day holy. It is not to have us rest. So the main idea is not to rest. The main idea is to become holy on Shabbat. If the purpose was to rest, then a person who just sleeps would be considered as having observed the Shabbat. Rest is a byproduct of the Shabbat. It's not the main purpose of Shabbat. To achieve the purpose of Shabbat, one must observe the Shabbat laws. Through the observance of the Shabbat laws, the Shabbat day becomes a peace, a day of peace on earth. Now, what are we talking about? Peace on earth? How do we get to peace on earth? The first way is peace within ourselves. Today you have many people who are turning to the Eastern cults, meditation, transcendental meditation, yoga, to try and bring peace into their lives. They're missing this element of peace. They're feeling the pressure, we're running around in society. And basically Judaism thought about this thousands of years ago. This whole idea of Shabbat is to bring peace back into our lives. Have we brought peace back into our lives? We have to bring and produce a state of inner peace by having us desist from all work which is not geared to making the Sabbath holy, and by having us rely on our own minds and bodies. During the week, we all rely on external stimulation. You ever sat in your car and felt lonely and switched on the radio? You ever sat in your house and felt there's nothing to do and switched on the TV? We're all relying on external stimulation. We're not at peace with ourselves. We cannot sit down and just think for ourselves. We don't feel at peace. We feel strange by ourselves today. We need the external stimulation. What the Shabbat is trying to tell us is, get back to yourselves, understand yourself first. Really, we're not allowed to use the TV, radio, trying to achieve a state where we are at peace with ourselves. And only by sitting down and not being distracted and have time to think clearly, is this going to be achieved. And that's one of the purposes of Shabbat. So we don't watch TV, we're not allowed to use machinery, otherwise rely on external sources of creativity. People are compelled to return to themselves for stimulation. So it's about we stimulate ourselves. We read, we try and get our minds occupied by stimulating our minds. We sing, we try and keep ourselves occupied. So all the creativity should come from the human being. So example, one should read, but one cannot write. Writing is forbidden because of its reliance upon an external vehicle of creativity. So relying on the pencil to create. All week we rely upon and often become enslaved to external vehicles of creativity and amusement, especially today, in the time of TV and video and whatever, all the other things. How much time do we have to ourselves? When we go home, our leisure time, we're busy doing other things. We don't have time for really ourselves. We see things, we're stimulated by other things. We don't really have time for our own brains. We don't really have peace of mind. There's a story which they give about Satan came to God, and we have to discuss whether Jews believe in Satan or not, but I'll just give you the story first. Satan comes to God and God says, "Hey Satan, aren't you busy today?" He said, "No," he says, "today mankind doesn't need me. There's TV, there's VCR, there's so many distractions. I'm out of a job today." We all make our own distractions, we're all distracted, and on Shabbat we try and get away from distractions. We try and liberate ourselves from dependence upon technology. While most modern men and women cannot conceive of life without cars, without televisions, without telephones, one who observes the Shabbat, it's great. I mean, no telephone calls, imagine. Today we have answering machines. We can just take a break anyway. Imagine not being interrupted. A person can have peace of mind one day a week. Nothing else to do. Just have peace of mind. Imagine a person keeps Shabbat as 1/7 of a person's life. Peace of mind. That's 10 years. A person lives to 70. 10 years just spent in the stage. It's very, it's a relaxing time. So the Shabbat often compels the individual to reflect. There's nothing else to do on the most significant questions concerning themselves and technology. After spending 6 days of work, creating, utilizing, expanding technology, the individual is freed on the seventh day to reflect on the question, work and technology towards what purpose? For what did I work all week? So it's a time of meditation. That's one of the purposes of Shabbat. Peace within oneself. The second purpose of Shabbat is peace between other people. Normally during the week we're very busy. Today, unfortunately, the home is becoming the base of operations. Yes.
Can you talk about work or talk about, money or talk about things like that?
In what sense? In whether it's allowed or not allowed?
Yeah, are you allowed to talk about those things? No,
you're allowed to talk about it. Because even talking about it is distracting from the main aim of Shabbat. The rabbis can tell you don't think about it, because it's very hard to control a person's thoughts. There's only two things which a person's not allowed to think about. What are they? Really? Idolatry?
Oh, yeah.
Person's not even allowed to think. And the second one is immorality. And even that's a debate. Mainly one thing is not being allowed to think about. Idolatry is the only commandment which Torah says even your brain don't even think about it. We have to believe in one God, not to believe in more. Not to believe in any other God. That's in the brain. Otherwise, the brain was left alone. Our thoughts were not controlled. Our actions and our speech. And eventually, through that, today we're talking about behavior modification. It's a very famous thing today in terms of psychology. They use this for children who are autistic, behavior modification. The Bible really works on the approach of behavior modification. If you change someone's behavior, you're going to change the way they think. The Bible says, don't do this, do this, don't do this, do this. And eventually, the thoughts are even going to be controlled. So it's very clever. The Bible doesn't say, Christianity starts from the other end. They say, do this, think about this and think about that. They have so much dogma, you have to believe in this, you have to believe in that. But what actions are not controlled? All you have to do is believe. So what it ends up is a system which is top-heavy. Nothing, and in the end, nothing comes out of it. Neither belief nor action. It's just lip service and that's it. What Judaism tries to do is control our actions, and from there, hopefully, the belief will come. It's very hard to control people's thoughts. So on Shabbat, we don't try and control people's thoughts. We say, you can think about whatever you want. You can think about what you're going to do. You can't talk about it, you can't do it. So what's the use of thinking about it? Usually that's what it boils down to. Usually that's a process. What happens is a person stops doing it, then a person stops talking about it, and the person stops thinking about it. It's not worth thinking about. Let's talk about peace between people. By ensuring that we refrain from reliance upon the inanimate, Shabbat laws compel us to seek relationships with the inanimate, first with ourselves, and then with members of our family. There's nothing else to do. What can we do on Shabbat? How do we amuse ourselves? We have to find amusements within ourselves and with the people around us. It's a very good technique to try and build relationships up in the family. One day a week, take the whole family and put them at home and say, you're not allowed to go out, you're not allowed to go shopping, you're not allowed to do anything else, you're not allowed to drive a car, you're not allowed to see TV. What are you allowed to do? Talk! They did a survey recently. By the way, the divorce rate is about 50%. For those who are married, they're very lucky. They're part of the 50% not married, not divorced. They did a survey recently which found that the average home, the husband and wife spend only 27 and a half minutes a week in discussion of issues unrelated to immediate family problems, such as who needs the car or who will pick up the groceries. So how long do we spend with our spouses and with our children? How much time do we have to talk? Very little today. So one day a week, thank God, you know, we have to spend with our families. And the rates of divorce amongst the religious are much lower. 80% are not divorced. I think it's a 20% or 10%, 10 to 20% divorce rate. And that's one of the reasons. The bonding is much higher because of this idea of Shabbat. The idea that we have one day at home to relax, to get ourselves in order, and to make peace with other people as well. Shabbat meal is a typical example. Friday night. For those who have a Shabbat meal with the whole family, it's a lengthy meal. There's no one else has another appointment to run to at the end of the meal. There's no baseball, there's no football, there's no TV. That means that the whole family, without any pressure, sit together and relax and talk and chat and get to know each other. So when we speak about the effects of the lengthy Friday night meal on people often react with envy and a feeling that in their families it would not work. People normally ask, you know, what can our families talk about for so long? How can we find topics to discuss for so long? And unfortunately, that's a symptom of a breakdown in the family relationship. If there's nothing to talk about, that's a breakdown. If you can't find anything common to talk about, that's a symptom of a breakdown. So Shabbat really serves a day of reunion and elevation of the family, and also a day that challenges the family to confront the question which many families prefer to avoid. Can family members communicate with each other? Are we all one big happy family? Can we get together? Can we talk? Or are we just separate individuals who happen to be related? So that's something which we have to ask ourselves, and that's one of the benefits of Shabbat as well. Thirdly, peace between people and nature. As we mentioned, it's forbidden to go out and garden. Go and do gardening on Shabbat. And the idea is to show that we are not in complete control of nature.
We have to respect, show respect for nature. Today this is very fashionable in terms of the environment. Only today has man realized that we're ruining the environment. However, the right at the beginning of Genesis, the Bible tells, God tells Adam, I put you in the Garden of Eden, le'ovda ul'shomra, to work it, but to guard it. You have a dual purpose. You're allowed to use it, to work it, but don't forget to guard it. One without the other doesn't work. On Shabbat, we stop anything to do with nature. And the idea is to remember, we're not in direct control, it doesn't belong to us, it belongs to God. And how are we working it? Are we using it up? Are we destroying it or not? That's the main idea behind that. So really, a person cannot plant a tree, tear a leaf on Shabbat. And also, a person cannot hunt animals. Hunting animals at the best of times is not allowed. Jews are not allowed to hunt. Number one, if we hunt, we cannot eat the animal. It's got to be killed through shechita, no other method. So the guy who hunts and kills the animal, he can't eat it. You can hunt an animal with a lasso, that's probably the only way, without damaging it, and then take it to the shochet and get it slaughtered properly. But it's not much fun. So this hunting, this idea of hunting, has never been a Jewish concept.
Fishing,
no, because fishing, there's no special method of killing.
Oh.
Fishing is allowed. As long as they're kosher fish, you can eat them. What is a kosher fish? A fish which has fins and scales. Those are the two classifications in the Bible for kosher fish. All these new things, shrimp and crab and all these things are kosher. So one day a week we show we're not the masters of nature. Nature is a force by itself. We show respect for nature at least one day a week. We're not even allowed to kill a mosquito. A mosquito buzzing around, infuriating. Not allowed to kill it. Try and kick it out the window. Try and shoot it out the window, but you can't kill it. So one day a week we show respect for God's creatures, for all God's creatures. That tries to instill respect for God's creatures in human life. Similar example, I mentioned this on Yom Kippur. We don't wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur. The idea is to show respect. The animal was killed. We made the leather from the animal. On Yom Kippur we show respect for animals. So God should show respect for us. Even though it's an animal and we're allowed to use it, we're allowed to use the flesh. We're not vegetarians. We believe we're allowed to use the flesh. This was a commandment to Noah. He was allowed to eat from the meat after the flood. Prior to that, Adam wasn't. Interesting. Some rabbis say that was the purpose of the world. The purpose of the world ideally would be not to eat meat. But meat is allowed in a very controlled fashion. And that is, Jewish law allows eating meat and eating chicken in a very controlled fashion. It's only certain species which are allowed. It's only a certain method which is allowed to be used. And again, the idea was to control it. Otherwise, eating meat with no limitations. You see how many species are extinct today. So we only eat the species which are domesticated, which are produced not by nature, because by nature it would be destroyed, it would be totally destroyed. We produce them ourselves, they're domesticated, and we breed them and we eat them, because we know they're not going to vanish.
What's the primary?
Okay, the Bible says in order to be holy. What is holiness? Control. All the laws in the Bible are given for a person to show self-control, was to control ourselves. If we cannot control ourselves, we can never achieve holiness. Perfection is only achievable through control. If we cannot control ourselves, how do we learn to control ourselves? The Bible is given as a code of control. Don't do this, do this. If you can do that, control your impulses, that's already a very high level. A person who sees so much food around today, there's so many restaurants, and says, look, I'm hungry, I can't eat here, and I can't eat here, and I can't eat here, and I can't eat here, I can only eat this, I can only eat that. A lot of control, especially when a person's hungry. As we find less and less of this today. Person's hungry, so what? Let's eat. You know, there's no control, there's nothing telling us what to do. So the Bible tries to inculcate in us this idea of control. This is something which we try and teach our children from a very early age. Control. How do you teach a child control? Only by telling him what to do, what not to do. And this you can do, and this you can't do. And then the child learns, oh, okay, this I can do, this I can't do. But there's no suggestions of what to do, what not to do, the child never learns control. So only God tried to teach human beings, mankind, control. And you see what happens when mankind is not controlled, it becomes a barbarian. Look at Hitler, look what happened. It's barbarism without control. So if you have society without control, it goes wild. So really the Torah does is put brakes on all these areas of the impulses, of instinct. Food is an instinct. It's a brake. Sexuality is an instinct. We're going to talk about that later. There's breaks. other kinds of things, speech about other people, instinct, brakes, everything which is instinctive. The brakes, we're not animals, try to elevate us from the animal stage to a higher stage. That's basically the idea. An animal, he's hungry, he eats anything in sight. We're not animals, we're not allowed to do that. So that's, it's trying to teach us to break our impulses, to control ourselves. So the third reason, so first said that we said the reason of Shabbat is peace within oneself. Second reason is peace with other people. Third reason is peace with man, with nature. The fourth reason is what we're building up to is peace between man and God. So on Shabbat we reflect on what God wants of us. Shabbat is God's day, it's a spiritual day. It's not a day where we have our physical masters, it's a day of the spiritual master. We reflect on God and the spiritual. So those basically are the four ideas behind the Shabbat, philosophical ideas behind Shabbat. Do you have any questions? Any questions? Yes.
Related to the kosher food.
Right.
Is there also a point also to separate, to keep you separate as a Jew from non-Jews?
Yes, definitely.
Is that?
Yes. That's one of them. That's one of the reasons. And that's also one of the reasons Shabbat. When we have a day of rest, we can't do anything. I mean, we're dull and boring one day a week. And people come to us and say, hey, can you come with us? We want to take you to the movie. No, I can't, Shabbat. So again, that separates us.
That bothers me because that. Yeah.
How can you be an example to a person? How are the Jews meant to be an example to the world if they're not separate? We have to be separate and distinct, and yet we have to be close enough to be an example, to be friendly enough for an example. The first classification of that, let me just give you an example. Abraham. Here was Abraham working his best to be friendly to people and try and draw them in and make them believe in God. First missionary was our forefather Abraham, trying to spread the knowledge of God in the world. God tells him, circumcise yourself. He says, hey God, he says, if I circumcise myself, I'm going to be different. I'm going to look different. If I'm going to look different, how can people associate with me? They won't want to associate with me. They'll say, hey, Abraham's different, he's separate, he's a person, he's a different person. God says, no, you have to be different to show the example. You have to look up to you and know that this guy's different, and say, why is he different? What is he doing? And then they'll see. Why is Israel always in the news? Why are the Jewish people always in the news? Because everyone knows we're different. If they didn't know we were different, we wouldn't be in the news. We'd be like them, and we'd be like everyone else, and no one would point a finger at us, and there would be no example. We have to be different in order to show an example. That's the whole purpose of the Jewish people. The whole purpose of Judaism is to be a holy nation in order to show the example to the rest of the world. It's not a chosenness, it's a burden. We were chosen for a burden. It's not something which is beautiful, which, you know, we'd really like. It's something which we were chosen for. It's a burden on us to be unique and be holy. And that's why always they point at us and expect us to be holy. It's interesting. We've lost our sense of mission. They haven't lost the sense of the Jewish mission. So that's something which we have to think about.
What's interesting about the Shabbat is when the Bible talks about it, there are five books in the Bible: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So the Bible refers to Shabbat in two of the books, and there's a lot of biblical theories about these. The fact that the last book of the Bible, Deuteronomy, repeats a lot of the laws in the Bible. It's called in Hebrew Mishnah Torah, which is the second Torah. In other words, it's a repetition of the whole Bible. Before Moses died, he repeated a lot of laws. So we find the Shabbat is referred to in the second book in Exodus, and also in the last book in Deuteronomy. And the interesting thing is the different words used to describe the Shabbat. So I just want to clarify that. So the whole Ten Commandments, in fact, are repeated twice in the Bible. In the second book, in Exodus, when the Jews came out of Egypt, they got the Ten Commandments. And then again, in Deuteronomy, Moses repeats the story and tells them about the Ten Commandments. The mitzvah of Shabbat is the fourth of the Ten Commandments. Okay, so it's the fourth of the Ten Commandments. In the book of Exodus, it says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy." That's the first time it mentions Shabbat. In the second time around, in the book of Deuteronomy, it says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy." Not remember, but observe the Sabbath. That's one difference. What's the difference between remembering and observing? That is one major question we have to answer. And the second difference in the accounts, in the book of Exodus it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, because in 6 days God created heaven and earth, and on the seventh day God rested. So the reason for keeping the Sabbath is to remember creation. God rested after creation. But in Deuteronomy it says, the reason for keeping the Sabbath is because you were slaves in Egypt and God took you out. So the second reason given in Deuteronomy is a different reason, is we were slaves in Egypt and God took us out of Egypt, and that's why we remember the Sabbath. So there's two different reasons given, and obviously these are the two questions we have to face. Number one, why does it use different language, remember and keep? And number two, why the different reasons for keeping the Sabbath? In order to remember creation, and number two, in order to remember the coming out of Egypt. So what are the differences in these? One of the famous biblical commentators was called Rashi. Rashi is an acronym for the words Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, Rabbi Shlomo Isaac. A lot of the rabbis were called by acronyms. The name got too long. Rambam is famous. Rambam is Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Rabbi Moses, the son of Maimon. Rabbi Maimon, who was here last year, I think he's related, he's descended from the Rambam. So that's an acronym was used very widely because people didn't want to spell out the whole name, they were lazy. So Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, he's a famous biblical commentator. He commented not only on the Bible, but he commented on the Mishnah, and he commented on the Talmud. So all of these, in fact the whole Bible nearly has his commentary. He lived in France in the 11th century, and apparently he was a very famous landowner. He had vineyards, he used to produce wine, his wine was very famous. Today you have a wine, I think Kelim produces a wine called Rashi after him, because he was a famous wine producer. I don't know how he had this time, but he had enough time to write these commentaries on the whole Bible. So in his commentary he explains as follows: why does the first time the Bible mention the Shabbat it says remember the Sabbath? And why does the second time it talks about Shabbat, it says keep the Sabbath? So he says, what's the difference between remembering and keeping? When you have someone in front of you who you know, obviously you don't remember him because you're seeing him right now. It's only when he's not there then you remember him. He says, remembering the Sabbath is referring to before the Sabbath. So the week prior to the Sabbath, a person remembers the Sabbath because it's not the Sabbath now. Whereas keeping the Sabbath is on the actual day. That's how Rashi explains. So his remembering is prior to the Sabbath, and keeping is remembering the Sabbath. Keeping the Sabbath. Keeping on the Shabbat, on the Shabbat itself. Let me give an example for this. The Jewish days of the week don't have any names. Interesting. English days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. What's the word for Sunday in Hebrew? Any ideas? Yom Rishon, first day. Monday, Yom Sheni, second day. Tuesday, Yom Shlishi, third day. There's no days. There's no names. In fact, it's also interesting, the months of the year, the Jewish months of the year, in the Bible, no names. It's the first month, second month, third month, slowly later, The Jews, when they went to Babylon, gave the months of the year Babylonian names. It's interesting. The Jewish names for the months are Babylonian names. And they came much later. They came about 1,000 years after the Bible was given. The Bible does not give any names for the months. It talks about the first month. And it counts the months from coming out of Egypt. That's the first time the Jews became a people. So it really counts the months from the middle of the year, from Nisan, from Passover. So when the Bible talks about the first month, it's referring to the first month of the year from coming out, from being a free people. Similarly, the months of the kings were always counted from Nisan, which is the first month from Passover. But why does the Bible always count the days of the week in terms of the first day, second day, third day? And the answer is we're always building up towards the Shabbat. So when the Shabbat's over, we know we have to count towards the next Shabbat. We're always counting forwards to the next Shabbat. So every day remembering the Shabbat. So we say this is the first day to Shabbat, the second day to Shabbat, until we get to the sixth day, and then the seventh day is Shabbat. So we're counting down, or counting up towards Shabbat. So this way remembering Shabbat all the week, and that fits into Rashi's commentary. The other big example we have of this is on Hanukkah. Hanukkah is 8 days. Every day we light an extra candle. Again, we're building up, because the eighth day is the biggest miracle. The lights in the temple, they only found one jar of oil, and that jar lasted 8 days. Every day was an extra miracle. We really should have burnt out the first day. It lasted an extra day, we light an extra light. Eighth day was the biggest miracle, it lasted 8 days, so we light 8 candles. We build up. So build up is seen, building up towards Shabbat. This way we remember the Shabbat through the days of the week, and we build up towards the Shabbat. So where the Shabbat is observed all week, we count towards it. That's what the remembering is referring to. And Jewish law says, we discussed this last night, when you see something nice in a store, you should buy it for Shabbat. If you see a nice dish, a nice piece of food, and it won't get stale today, we have refrigerators, you should always try and buy something, even during the week. See something nice, buy it for Shabbat. This way, a person remembers Shabbat all week, everything is geared towards Shabbat. So really, Shabbat is the goal of the week. We don't rest on Shabbat in order to work. We work on the 6 days in order to rest. It's like saying, what do? You eat to live, or do you live to eat? So we live, we don't live to eat, we eat to live. It's a means to an end, it's not an end in itself. Eating is not an end to itself, it never has been in Jewish law. Similarly, we don't have Shabbat in order to rest and earn our living later. We have Shabbat in order, that's the goal. We work in order to have Shabbat. We work all the 6 days. And that is what the Bible tells us. It says you will work 6 days, and the seventh day you will rest. Because the 6 days leading up to the goal of resting. So really we have to see the Shabbat as a goal. It's a goal of the week. It's not a day of rest so that we can refresh ourselves in order to work the next week. We work all week in order to enjoy the spiritual and the physical aspects of Shabbat. And this is the answer to the question of who do we work for? Why are we working? Who do we work for? When God created man, God created a partnership between body and soul. Man comes from the dust of the earth, that's what the Bible says, and there was a physical aspect of man. But the spirit, the soul, comes from God. So we have a partnership between the body and the soul. We have a partnership between the physical and the spiritual. What Judaism tries to do is blend the two without getting top heavy in either way. It's a perfect merge between the physical, a perfect balance between the physical and the spiritual. So in other words, in terms of Jewish life, we see the 7 days are split, 6 days we work in the physical, and the seventh day is the spiritual. That's one day which we have for the spiritual. That's the balance in our lives. But during the 6 days as well, we have to realize what we're working towards. The goal is the spiritual, not the physical. When Judaism started, it was a very revolutionary concept to rest 1 day a week. I mean, they never had that concept before. They were working all the time. It's interesting. We don't think about it today. Today we have 2 days. For a long time, the anti-Semites accused the Jews of being lazy. They took a day off. Lazy people. Prior to Christianity, it was unheard of for other religions to rest 1 day. They had their holy days, maybe once or twice a year, but they never had a set day a week. In fact, the introduction of the 7 day week is a Jewish concept. It's one of the concepts we have given to the world. We don't even think about it. But thousands of years ago, because of the Bible, the whole world has a 7 day week today. They tried to change this recently in Russia, when they were still under communist control. They tried to make an 8 day week. This way they would have 7 days work and 1 day rest. They tried to get the most out of the people. It didn't work. They tried out, but it didn't go. So 7 day working week seems to have worked. And this is one of the contributions the Jews gave to the world. We don't realize how many contributions we have. We've changed, totally changed society. Judaism has changed society totally. If we would compare society today to what society was prior, it wouldn't be recognized. The idea of ethics and monotheism and morality all being given by the Jews to the world. And one of the little things we've given is 7-day working week and the idea of a rest day during this this week. So obviously the Christians took it and they changed it, luckily, to a Sunday. Prior to that, the Hebrew Christians, the first Christians were Jews. Jesus himself was a Jew. These Hebrew Christians went to synagogue on Shabbat, kept Shabbat, kept all the laws of kosher. So later on, when Jesus died, his followers changed to attract the masses of people. They didn't want to rely on Jews converting, because not many Jews converted. They wanted to make their religion more appealing to the non-Jews, to the pagans. So a lot of pagan customs developed into Christianity, and they were intermingled, mixed with it. That's interesting. And the idea of the new year, apparently Jesus was born on the 25th of December, the new year is his birthday, and there's a Brit. The Brit took place on the new year, that's why it became the new year. So all these, you can see what we have given to the world. They've taken all these concepts and they've mixed it up, like the Pope wears a kippah. I mean, where do you think he got the idea from? All these concepts were taken from Judaism, even Islam, a lot of it, the idea of halal meat, had to be slaughtered in a certain way. All these concepts were taken from Judaism. But two of the major religions, at least, are based on Judaism, are founded from Judaism. So really, Shabbat experience is given by the Jews to the world. The 7-day working week is a Jewish concept. So who calls the shots in terms of our lives and what we work for? All week long we work to make a living to support ourselves. In that sense we're working for our bodies, because we're working towards the physical. We're supporting ourselves physically. So when we count, this is the first day to Shabbat, and this is the second day of Shabbat, we're reminding ourselves of the true goal. The true goal is, we're working ourselves towards the spiritual, not just the physical. So we're working for our bodily sustenance, but always with a view towards the ultimate, a view towards the soul, a view towards the spiritual. There's a lovely story about Menachem Begin, one of the prime ministers of Israel. Israel, till today, works a 6-day week. You work all 6 days on the Sabbath. Shabbat is the only day off. So someone asked him, an American asked him, he says, Menachem, he says, when do you think Israel will start working a 5-day week? So Menachem says, we'll do it slowly. First we'll work 1 day, then we'll work 2 days, then we'll work 3 days, eventually we'll work 5 days. That was his joke. He says, people don't really work in Israel. They have tea breaks and coffee breaks, especially in the civil service. There's a law that says you only need a mezuzah in a room where there's a person sleeps or a person eats. So the Israeli civil service, they all have mezuzahs, because they do both. Okay. So remembering our soul, that is one of the mitzvah of remembering the Sabbath. Remembering the Sabbath means remembering spirituality. We will work and work all week. We are asked to remember that everything is for the sake of the soul. Our goal in life is to reach whatever Shabbat represents. What does Shabbat represent? Shabbat represents the spiritual. Shabbat is not a day to collapse so we can get on the treadmill again. Shabbat is a means, it's an end to itself. It's we work 6 days in order to flavor the spiritual experience of the Shabbat. I'm going to go into the purposes of Shabbat a bit later. Now, what about the two reasons the Bible gives? In the book of Exodus, the Bible tells us the Shabbat is for to remember that God rested on the seventh day. God created the 6 days, God rested the seventh day. Obviously, God doesn't need to rest. I mean, how did he create? He just willed something to happen and something happened. He didn't really need to rest, so we have to understand the concept of work and rest as well. But let's take these two reasons the Bible gives. In Exodus, it says, remember the Sabbath to make it holy because God rested on that day. In the book of Deuteronomy, the Bible says, keep the Sabbath to make it holy because God took you out from Egypt, from the land of bondage. The idea is a slave never has a moment's rest. And we rest one day to show we're not slaves today. The difference between a slave and a free person is a slave cannot have any leisure time, a free person has leisure time. So we show that we are free people by resting that day, we take the rest. So even a person who's self-employed, the Jewish classification of a slave is a person who doesn't stop. So a person who works 7 days, even though they're self-employed, a Jew, I would say he's a slave. A slave to his work, a slave to his labor, doesn't have any rest. So now, what is the concept of melacha, of work? So the question most rabbis are asked is, Rabbi, you need to tell me that switching on a light on Shabbat is work. Yeah. What I have to do is flick a switch, that's not work. In those days, they had to cut and gather wood. They had to work hard to get the initial spark. Today, it's just a flick of a switch. Is that considered work? So how do we answer that question? What is work referring to over here? The Bible, when it talks about Shabbat, it says, Sheshet Yamim Tavod, 6 days you will labor. And you will do all your work. There are two words used here for work. One is labor, in Hebrew, Avodah. And the other one is work, which is Melacha. And then when it talks about Shabbat, it says, and you will, on Shabbat, you will not do any work. It doesn't say you will not do any labor. So here, when we talk about Shabbat, we're not talking about work in the sense of sweat, physical labor. It's talking about creative labor, creative work. God created the world without any effort. So it's talking about creation. Creative forms of labor are not allowed. And that's what I want to give out here. The sheet. Let me just pass it around. The sheets which describe 39 forms of labor which are not allowed on Shabbat. I'll discuss them more in detail at some other time. As you'll see, most of them are creative forms of labor. We're creating something by doing something. So now, what is the difference between work and labor, between creative forms of labor and physical work? I'll make some more later. I'll make some more copies later for those who don't have it. We're not really going to go into that, just for your reference. So what is the difference? One is creative, one is not creative. What can't be done on Shabbat? It's not labor in terms of physical labor. I have a guest coming. I need to move a sofa bed three flights. I'm allowed to on Shabbat. No problem at all. That's labor. That's physical labor. No problem. But I'm allowed to do physical labor. What I can't do is creative forms of work. I can't switch on a light because I'm creating something which wasn't there before. I can't change something. I'm cooking. I'm changing something. A food which is raw to a food which is cooked. So that's creative forms of work. Those are the forms of work which are not allowed. Other forms of labor which are physical are allowed. Well, I'm not changing. Physical labor is allowed on Shabbat.
Question. Yeah.
Yeah, but what's the? I'm talking about the philosophical reason behind it. Philosophical reason behind switching on. Extinguishing is also forbidden. Extinguishing is also. I'm changing something which was there before to something to make it disappear. So it's changing. Any kind of change, if it's creative or destructive, is forbidden. So any form of change is forbidden. But work which does not involve change, I'm just moving things around, that's allowed. The only exception is carrying in a place where there's no eruv. Even though that's not, that's called a malacha grua. It's not a complete form of labor. It's not a complete form of creation.
Right.
These things basically are creative forms of labor. So any kind of creative form of labor where you're changing something or creating something new, those are the kinds of labor which are forbidden. So technically I can move furniture around all my life, you know, on Shabbat I can rearrange my whole house, technically. Even though I'm sweating, there's no problem at all. But flicking a light switch is melacha, because melacha is a creative form of work, and that is forbidden. Now let's look at the roots in the Hebrew terms of melacha. What is melacha? The Hebrew root is malach. What is a malach? An angel. What is an angel? A messenger of God. A messenger. When we do work, that really is, the work we do is our messenger. It shows what we want to do. It's the messenger of our thoughts. So the work we do is a messenger of our will, of our desires. So to determine what is a creative act, the Bible uses the forming of the tabernacle. When the Jews in the wilderness were given, they couldn't build a temple, they weren't permanent in any place, they had to move around. The Bible says, look, build a sanctuary for God, a portable sanctuary. So all the things which they did to make the sanctuary, those are the things which we are forbidden to do on Shabbat. Those are considered creative acts, and they are forbidden to do on Shabbat. Those are the 39 categories which you have in front of you. Those are the biblical categories, and obviously there are many more things which the rabbis talked about which grow out of them. So creative activities ranging from planting to cooking to writing, etc., all those things are forbidden to do on Shabbat. But why are these things forbidden to be done on Shabbat? We are bidden to imitate God. 6 days God worked, and on the seventh he rested. Obviously, God doesn't need to take days off for physical labor, because that doesn't do any physical labor. That's not the kind of rest the Torah is talking about. The Torah is talking about creative rest. You know, when God stopped creating. When it talks about God resting, it means God stopped creating. Now, why did God stop creating? He ceased creating to show that he was God and the Creator. In other words, he could tell creation stop. He didn't put into effect a chain of events which is just non-stop. He says, look, enough is enough, stop. In fact, it's interesting, one of the words in the mezuzah, on the outside of the mezuzah is the word Shaddai. Shaddai is the name of God, which stands for either Shomer Dlatot Yisrael, three words. Shomer is guardian, Dlatot, the doors of Israel. Shaddai, that's what it could mean. The real meaning of Shaddai is Zeh She'amar Le'olam Dai. He told the world stop. He told creation stop. As he shows his authority over creation by stopping creation. That is also a proof that God is the creator, that he stopped everything. Yes. Again, a tanya knot would create something which wasn't there. It would create a binding which wasn't there. You're creating two things to be linked together. That kind of knot is not considered a knot. That's a temporary, okay. That's not considered a knot. We're talking about a permanent knot. In those days, they classified it as a workman's knot. Like, say, a fisherman when he makes a knot on the nets. Those knots were pretty good. They were never opened. They're not. Those are considered knots. Over here, this is temporary. It's not really creating something which is permanent. Especially a bow knot is not considered a knot at all in Jewish law. It's not considered a knot. Fortunately, thankfully.
Cutting grass.
Cutting grass on Shabbat is not allowed.
It's gardening.
Right. Maybe. Gardening is creative form of nature. We're interfering with nature. Interfering with nature on Shabbat is not allowed. We're going to discuss that again. Without a tear, obviously we have to eat on Shabbat. How restrictive do you make Shabbat? It's got to be a day of enjoyment as well. And there's got to be a very fine balance.
You're allowed to tear.
I'm allowed to tear, but in a non-creative way. I'm allowed to tear in a destructive way. I'm ripping up a bag apart.
Do you now use a thing to put on tinfoil to cut a
tinfoil
then?
You're not allowed to cut a tinfoil to a certain specific size. I'm not allowed to measure and cut. I cut without measuring. I'm not specifically to measure and cut, because then that's another form of creation. You have to do that in a building process. You cut things to size and build. Now, these laws are very involved. I'm just giving you a brief list. It's not a place to go through them. I'm going through them on Tuesday night, for those who want to come. And we're going through it in real detail on Tuesday nights. I just want to try and talk about a bit of philosophy behind it. What's the idea behind Shabbat? So the idea of Shabbat is not really rest. It's for a person to show they're in control. I can say stop. I'm not a slave. I'm emulating God, who told the world to stop. That is the connection between coming out of Egypt, the fact that God took us out from slavery, we're not slaves anymore, and the fact that God stopped creation as well, to show he was the master, he was the boss.